Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Donald Trump was in Philadelphia today. He spoke to congressional Republicans holding their annual policy retreat. The president began in campaign mode, celebrating his win in Pennsylvania. He then talked about the multiple executive orders he signed yesterday, saying those orders will strengthen borders and existing immigration law.
Congress passed these laws to serve our citizens, and it's about time those laws were properly enforced. They're not enforced.
The president is expected to sign more executive orders on refugees and legal immigrants before the end of the week, and we'll talk about those decisions in just a few minutes. But first, let's hear some local reaction to Trump's immigration orders yesterday, because one of them in particular could have a serious impact on multiple Massachusetts cities and towns. Here again is Trump in Philadelphia today.
At long last, cracking down on sanctuary cities.
Well, there are at least 9 Massachusetts municipalities that either call themselves or could qualify as sanctuary cities. These are cities and towns that, among other actions, will not provide federal authorities with information on the immigration status of residents without a criminal warrant. Trump's executive order calls for freezing almost all federal funding to these cities and towns. So let's turn to one of them. Chelsea City Manager Tom Ambrosino. What's his reaction to the president's crackdown?
Disappointed that the president would try to target cities that are doing nothing more than trying to ensure good relations with their residents and provide people who've come to this country looking for a better life with comfort and security and safety.
Now, the executive order has a really broad description of what a sanctuary city is, and it includes cities that have certain policies that conflict with federal law. I mean, what is it that Chelsea does that might put it in conflict with federal law?
I don't believe we ever violate federal law. I mean, the reality is that in the city of Chelsea, we're really not concerned about your immigration status, documented or undocumented. We treat you with dignity and respect. And if your only sin, so to speak, is that you've come to this country and settled in Chelsea looking for a better life and want to make a better life for yourself and your children, then we have no concern as to whether you're in full compliance with federal immigration laws. I don't know by doing that we're violating any provision of federal law.
Yeah, no, point well taken. So let me ask more specifically. Oftentimes, cities and towns have said explicitly to federal immigration authorities, for example, that, you know, if we arrest someone for in our locality, we're not going to necessarily reach out to immigration authorities or comply with a detention request from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Is that the kind of thing that Chelsea does as well?
Well, let's be very precise. If we're holding some dangerous criminal, we will work with ICE if that person is undocumented. No one in Chelsea, including other undocumented individuals, wants dangerous criminals in their neighborhood. If, however, ICE is requesting that we hold someone that we would otherwise be releasing solely on a civil federal immigration matter, we will not be cooperating with that. Mm-hmm. That we don't feel that we have any legal obligation to do so, and we don't believe that our local police should be enforcing federal immigration laws. That is not their role, and doing that would make it very difficult to operate in a city where we have an extremely large population of first-generation immigrants, some of whom we know are undocumented.
Yeah. Have you been able to speak with some of your fellow residents there in Chelsea since the president signed the order yesterday? I mean, what are they saying? How are they feeling?
Since the election, the police chief and I have together spoken at many different forums to try to calm fears in the city. Naturally, anytime the president does something on immigration that generates headlines, it's going to create some additional fear, notwithstanding all the groundwork that we've laid. So I do understand that there is more trepidation in Chelsea today than there was yesterday. But I know the message is out there to our local community that local leaders here, myself as city manager, the city council, the police chief, the superintendent of schools, stand behind them. And I believe that that has helped people not overreact.
Mm-hmm. The executive order includes a statement that says that for cities that that are sanctuary cities or that the federal government identifies as sanctuary cities, there's the possibility of federal funds being withheld from those cities. How much federal funding does Chelsea receive? What kind of, if that were to happen, what kind of impact would it have?
We receive a significant amount of federal funding, particularly in our school department. So we have a lot at stake here. Nonetheless, as I have made clear and the city council has made clear, we're not changing our policies or our practice mm-hmm. in the way we treat the residents of the city as a result of this presidential order. Treating everyone here, documented or undocumented, with dignity and respect is part of our core values in the city, and those are not for sale. They don't have a price attached to them. If we lose federal funding, and I certainly hope we don't, and I will be fighting every legal way I can to prevent that, but if nonetheless we do, the city will find a way forward. Mm-hmm. We won't change our policies.
Mm-hmm. Is there a dollar value in terms of the amount of federal funding that Chelsea receives? Are we talking several million?
I couldn't give you a specific number, but it is in the several millions, yes.
Okay. I've read that some of that federal funding goes to supporting programs such as anti-youth violence programs in Chelsea.
Well, that's the ironic thing. We just recently were recipients of a significant grant from the U.S. Department of Justice to target youth violence and help the city in that realm. And in fact, one of the things that grant is helping us support is a youth worker whose focus really is undocumented youth who don't have strong ties yet to the country, to ensure that we're providing sufficient support so that they don't turn to gangs and otherwise will turn to existing social service organizations for the assistance and the encouragement that they're looking for.
Is another way of putting that, and this is probably going to sound like a leading question, that in the president's attempts, in his words, to make communities more safe through these executive orders, that you're wondering if it might end up making Chelsea less safe?
I think it absolutely has that potential. And the other thing is that most of the communities, and I can speak for Chelsea, but I know it rings true in others, that have adopted these policies have done so because they're trying to create better relationships between their local police and residents. Making local police forces immigration agents is going to undermine all of those efforts. And so you're correct. I think this is a policy that could backfire and instead of making communities safer, really undermine safety.
Well, Tom Ambrosino is the Chelsea City Manager. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, let's turn now to another executive order Trump is expected to sign as early as tomorrow. This one would signal a major change in America's policy on refugees. According to a draft of the order obtained by the Associated Press and others, Trump proposes slamming the door on all refugees from around the world for 120 days. Syrian refugees could be barred from the U.S. indefinitely. Trump also plans to suspend issuing new visas for people from Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, or Yemen for at least 30 days, according to that draft proposal. Now, we want to hear your reaction to this executive action. Should the U.S. stop accepting refugees as the Trump administration reexamines the U.S. refugee program? Will it make America safer or less safe? Are you a refugee who has come to the U.S.? Do you have family members who are trying to get through the process? Or do you think this is a much-needed step for the United States as it rethinks immigration? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, joining us now in the studio is Sasha Chanoff. He's co-founder and executive director of Refuge Point, a humanitarian agency that resettles refugees to the U.S. in collaboration with the government and supports refugees overseas. Sasha, welcome back to the show.
Meghna, nice to see you.
Okay, so you've seen the draft of this executive order. Again, we don't know if it's exactly the same wording that will appear before the president when he's expected to sign some kind of executive order, possibly tomorrow, but your first reactions to these proposals?
The draft executive order will gut the U.S. refugee resettlement program. It also reduces the numbers from 110,000 to 50,000, which is the lowest number that we would have brought in since 1999. It's a cruel measure. It's a departure from American core values, thinking about sanctuary cities. In fact, conservative Americans and religious leaders stood up for refugees in the 1980s when people from Central America were fleeing into our country. They met them face to face. The U.S. government wanted to deport them for foreign policy reasons, and Americans said, we can't do that. This is a departure from values that we hold dearest.
So let me just jump in here, because yes, I mean, the proposal we've seen that that several media organizations obtained does state that the total number of refugees long-term would be cut in half, down to that 50,000 that you're talking about. But about the immediate 120-day freeze, do you have any concerns about that? I mean, it could be seen as just a four-month freeze as the Trump administration reexamines vetting procedures, for example.
The U.S. government has the strictest vetting procedures for our refugee resettlement program. It takes an average of 2 years for any refugee to come here. We handpick the people that we then introduce to the U.S. government program. They then go through multiple interviews with people from the Department of Homeland Security and others. And this is extreme vetting. 15 national security agencies then go through an analysis of each one of these people. And at any step of the way, they're all sharing information. At any step of the way, people can be stopped. There is no data to support the fact that refugees are a danger to us. This is a narrative based on fear and not fact.
So I want to hear in a minute more about what your long-term thoughts are here. But we've got a full set of phones of people who want to have their say. Sasha Chanoff is executive director of Refuge Point. He's speaking to us about the executive orders that President Trump may sign or is likely to sign regarding refugees in the United States. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from the Back Bay. You're on the air, Chris.
Yes, I was just going to make a comment that I don't think it's a horrible idea. You know, government is use a little reassessment and to stop and focus on immigration laws for 30 days to 120 days. Hold off on visas and make sure that there is deep due diligence and a little bit of focus on this is not the worst thing in the world, and I think we could all potentially benefit from it.
Hey, Chris, before I let you go, let me just ask you, Sasha Chanoff just told us that for refugees in particular, the vetting process already is 2 years long before they can even think about entering the United States. Is that not vigorous enough for you?
I think we hear a lot of things that are supposed to be happening or not happening within the government. And this is a new president coming in, a new administration, if they so choose to put things on pause for a very brief period of time and to assess what is actually really happening or not happening. And even if they determine that what was just said is absolutely true, then that's fine. But there's nothing wrong with stopping and putting a check on activities within the government, how these agencies are handling immigration. It's just not a horrible a short-term pause and an assessment of what's actually happening is a healthy thing.
Chris, thank you so much for your call. Sasha Chanoff, your response to that?
I think that the government can do an analysis while keeping the U.S. program open. The fact is that this short-term pause will not just be a short-term pause. It says 4 months, but there are so many different factors from medical exams to security checks that expire and have to realign. So it will actually place people in ongoing danger for many more months and potentially years. These include people like Iraqi interpreters who have served our military and supported us, some of whom risked their lives to support our forces when we were in Iraq. Their lives are in danger because of their support to America. When we shut our doors on them and others, we are placing them in ongoing danger. I think what Chris said is totally reasonable and rational, but I know from personal experience, having worked for over 20 years in the U.S. government program, there was a big overhaul in 2011. After 9/11, we put extreme measures in place. Our vetting process is so extreme already. President Trump can continue to keep the refugee program open while he does his vetting, and I hope he would find that it makes sense.
Well, there was an op-ed in the Washington Post today written by a woman named Linda Jay. She's a Syrian refugee who's currently living in Baltimore. It took her 2 years to get here. She fled Damascus in 2014, and she described some of her the vetting that she went through as at least 5 in-person interviews with members of the United States government, countless phone conversations. She said the interviewers often knew the answers to questions before they even asked them. For example, they asked her about her life going back to the day she was born, and they even knew the hospital she was already born at and were confirming whether or not she was who she said she was by asking those kind of questions. And she says her answers had to match with those given by other people she was socially connected to as well.
They do such extreme vetting for this program. They often bring in different people from the family. They isolate them. They talk to one another. They isolate them and then make sure their stories are aligned. But the other thing to point out is that that woman and many others may have family members overseas too. And when we put a pause on this program, we put a pause on those family members whose lives are in danger right now. So we are tearing apart families. We are withdrawing support from people who have supported our military. We are putting in direct danger many children who are not terrorists, and we have the most severe vetting to do all this.
Well, let's take a couple more calls. Sergio is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Sergio.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick statement. If Mr. Trump regards himself as such a smart business person, why not look at the immigration issue as a business plan? It's a lot cheaper to legalize the folks who are here undocumented now than it is to spend billions of dollars hunting them down and, of course, separating families, as your previous caller stated. As a simple business decision, it makes a lot more sense to keep the folks who are already here, invest in them as they've invested in this country. It's a lot cheaper in the long run. Mm. If he's all about business, then it's a pretty sound business plan in my mind.
Sergio, thank you so much for your call. We got a lot of people who want to have their word here. So let me turn to Jay, who's calling from East Boston. You're on the air, Jay.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. What's your thought?
Good. So I preface my comment by saying I think our immigration system needs serious fixing so that we can accommodate legal immigration, because we do need to re-up our population that is aging, and we will need plenty of immigrants to do that. However, illegal immigration needs to stop. And so those two things need to happen hand in hand, side by side. And I think there are serious security concerns that your previous guest said, that there isn't a problem with crime. I would argue otherwise. I could read you a very long list that I just Googled.
Hey Jay, your cell phone signal is kind of coming in and out, and I don't mean to cut you off, but it's getting kind of hard to hear you. But I hear your concerns about the current immigration system in the United States, and I want to sneak in one more call here. Thank you, Jay, for calling. Let's go to Ian, who's calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Ian.
Hi, Radio Boston. My name's Ian. I am the great-grandchild of 8 refugees, at least one of whom was undocumented. If they had not been allowed into the United States, thanks to America's liberal immigration policies at the time, I most certainly wouldn't be alive, and also America would have been without my family's contributions over the last 100 years. So we can't be two-faced about this.
Right.
We it is important for us to welcome refugees because at first there's the humanitarian grounds, and the second, immigrants have always enriched our country and our culture.
Ian, I'm going to take it back from you there because I'm fast running out of time, but I hear your point, and I take your point. I want to turn back to Sasha Chanoff before we do run out of time. Sasha, in those three calls, we heard the gamut of very deeply held opinions mm-hmm. about refugees and immigration, everything from Ian, he considers himself the great-grandchild of eight, some of them undocumented immigrants, all the way to the earlier caller who said taking a pause is no problem, and his concern about illegal immigration and crime. And then we had the caller who said, look, if you want to deal with this as a business, deal with the immigrants who are already here. So, I mean, like, how do you wrap your head around all of this?
Well, perhaps I'll just start with Ian and Sergio's comments about contributions of refugees. I wrote an op-ed in the Boston Globe about how refugees actually contribute to their communities and to cities. If you look at Lewiston, Maine, St. Louis, Missouri, Utica, New York, or many other places, you see that they have regenerated downtown depressed areas that were crime-ridden before. Refugees came in, started businesses. The Bosnian community in St. Louis, Missouri, has regenerated that whole city in many very important ways. Refugees are also patriotic Americans. There's been this narrative that refugees want to harm America. They don't. They're our most patriotic citizens. They understand from the deepest experiences that freedom is the most precious thing in the world, and they value it more than anything. They join our military. They are our patriots. They are our newest Americans. When we turn our backs on them, we actually compromise our national security in many ways. These are people who are out there supporting us and can help give us information that supports our national security interests.
Mm. Well, we've only scratched the surface of this conversation. We'd love to have you back, Sasha, as we know the exact details of what's in the executive order that the president is likely to sign. Sasha Chanoff, executive director of Refuge Point, an agency that resettles refugees in the U.S. and has done so in collaboration with the U.S. government, and co-author of From Crisis to Calling. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Magna.
And callers, thank you for calling in. Go to our website, radioboston.org, and write up your comments there. If I couldn't get you on the air, you know we're going to come back to this topic. So again, it's radioboston.org. Back in a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.